You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
All right, so which religious organization is going to get pissed off with this show?
I think I'll probably the Catholic Church the most, because I think it definitely feels like it's based a lot on Catholicism.
What, the Catholic Church accused of bad stuff? That's never happened before.
Exactly. Well, actually, Philip Pullman's AM is an atheist, so he's really anti-religious, anti-religion.
Yeah, this kind of thing is like a young adult, like, atheist manifesto in the eyes of some people.
So. I read it back when I was in middle school, so it is kind of like for that age group.
I still think Harry Potter got more crap than this trilogy ever did, though.
Well, I mean, his Dark Materials was popular, but Harry Potter was super popular.
Yeah.
That's true.
You're not going to really see his Dark Material theme parks or merchandise on sale.
No. I've actually read a whole book, though, about somebody who talks about how who wrote about how Harry Potter actually has a lot of Christian values in there, if you really look at it.
I mean, you can see a little bit of it, which is interesting to see how J.K. has followed up with her opinions on certain things with, you know, like how Christian the books actually are. But theology aside, we are talking about HBO's adaptation of His Dark Materials. Like we said, this is based on a popular book series by Philip Pullman that came out. Oh, when did the first book come out? Would you guys know?
I think that was 95.
Wow, I think you're right.
Is that old?
Yeah, let me look at
it. It's a lot of 90s stories out there. Like, Game of Thrones started in the 90s, Witcher started in the 90s, this started in the 90s.
Yeah, I'm checking right now just to make sure, but it was 1995, July 1995.
Okay,
I've read it. I remember that publication date. All right, Brad.
Yeah, so it looks like, there's only, I think, how many books are in there?
There's three of them. It's a trilogy.
Okay, so now...
And he's written two more since.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I've only read the three then. Sorry, I didn't know there was more.
Well, you know, it's that weird time in an author's life when he doesn't have any new ideas. So he's like, what about a companion piece to my trilogy?
Ah, I see. Companion. Okay, that's why.
Right. Yeah. So it says here that he did some short stories in 2003 and 2008. And then he was starting a new trilogy called La Belle Sauvage and the Book of Dust or something like that. Like part of a whole...
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I read it way before that those books came out, so that's...
Yeah. I haven't read those newer ones.
Let me do a quick introduction, too, because you probably hear a new voice on this podcast for you people listening at home. So, I mean, I'm Justin, as usual, and over here is, you know, VIP on the podcast here, Bradley. He's on freaking everything lately.
Hello!
Hey! And then over here is a very dear friend of mine. It's Paloma.
Hello.
Hey! Everything going well otherwise, though, Paloma? You've been having a good Christmas and everything, or holidays?
Going very well. Very fun Christmas. My sister's flying in tomorrow, so we'll see. So we'll be flying in at 11:30, so she'll be very tired for Thanksgiving Day.
I've been driving a bunch for the last few days, so I'm feeling that tired, too. that's awesome. That's good to hear. Now, who feels bold enough to try and explain the synopsis for people maybe not familiar with His Dark Materials? Like, where does this start off this season?
I'll try. It's very complicated.
All right.
So I will do a best to do it in a couple sentences. So it starts off with a little baby Lyra being dropped off by her uncle Lord Ezreal to a Jordan College, like a school of, is an Oxford school, and then she kind of spends, you know, up until she's, I think it's like 10 or 11. She's grows up in Jordan College. It's sort of like their version of Oxford College. It's important to remember in this society there's these things called daemons, which are basically people's souls, and they grow up from when they're little kids. They're changing constantly, and then when they get to adult age, like I think more is like it's more like adolescent age, like 13 or 14, it stops. The daemon stops changing forms, becomes this one animal, and that's when they become an adult.
Yeah, so they're all animals like monkeys and birds and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you know, adventure starts when it's a hard one to explain. Then it's sort of, I guess, to fast forward into her friend Roger gets kidnapped by these people called the Gobblers that are just taking children away that, you know, don't have parents or these are kind of nomadic. And basically the whole plot is her trying to find her friend and save him and going to the Antarctic and Egyptians, and it's Yeah, it's hard because the whole thing is just very complicated. But that's
yeah, because I know there's a lot of interconnected parts with this thing because, you know, first of all, there's a big cast of people in this show.
I mean, most of them are humongous cast.
Yeah, like those of them are like relatively semi-known because the main character here, Lyra, is being played by Daphne King from Logan, which it's so great to see her doing something else.
It is. She also did I don't forget what it's called now. She also did a minor British television show, I think called Colony or something like that. It was a British television show that's like one season.
Oh, was that The Refugees?
Yeah, The Refugees. That's right. It was The Refugees, and she was with her father in that one.
So how is she as a lead actress in this?
I think she's really amazing. I think it's like in Logan, I think she can show complex emotions really well, and I think that for you know a young person leading a show, she does a really amazing job.
All right. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a child-driven show, and it's a story for children, believe it or not. So her being believably naive, but also having this look of curiosity and wisdom behind her years, nailed it perfectly, I thought. You know, Lyra Belacqua is a very complicated character in the sense that most kids in TV shows are put in a box and are told, this is all you'll ever be. You know, whether it's the kid who wanders off and they're like, where's... You know where I'm going with this. What was that dumb kid's name? Carl? Where's Carl? Like, she's 100 times more complicated than Carl, for example.
Most kid characters are more complicated than Carl.
Who is Carl? I'm trying to remember. Yes. Who is Carl? Oh, are you talking about The Walking Dead?
Yeah, just two jokes.
Okay, that's
you don't remember Carl from His Dark Materials? Carl's the best character.
Okay, so yeah, that's... She's sort of like this very... She's very adventurous and really daring and sort of like has the fear... In the books, she's a little bit more fearful than she is in the TV show.
Okay.
But I think that's because we want her to be more daring because it's more interesting to watch.
So that's one thing I wanted to ask then. So based on this, like, how much is this staying faithful to the books and how much are they taking a bit of liberty with the stories?
I've been rereading the book as I've been watching. I'm still way early on. I didn't start reading until I was almost done with the TV show. But it's pretty similar. I would say like 85 to 90% similar.
Okay.
I think the thing that I wish that they had done, but they could have been closer to what it was. But I think the special effects budget would probably be too expensive. Is that in the book, Pan changes a lot more forms than he does in the TV show. He spends most of his time being like a ferret, a white ferret. While in the TV show, in the books, he's like 50 different things. But I think that's because of the special effects.
I mean, this show's as expensive as it is. I'm sure they didn't have the time and budget to be able to do
that. Yeah, they don't have the time, but that's why I'm not hating on it for that reason. But it must be the budget and the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am hating on it for that, since I know it's not that way. This world feels very underpopulated.
Yeah, I agree.
For the fact that every single person walking around is also have to have an animal that's with them. And it's definitely not that show. And I'll admit I'm being a total snot by saying it should have been, but...
I can see the complaints, because Witcher had that same problem where it's like, it's a big fantasy universe with about 30 people in this one city.
And I have to say that I'm trying to follow it, and I realized that the time travel thing, I didn't just realize that we were seeing the princess... I won't talk anymore about that, Witcher, but I got a little confused. I'm excited to listen to your podcast to kind of get that clarification, but that episode. Yeah. But I agree with... I read a little article that... The reason why they didn't do that because the demons are supposed to be quote unquote part of the background because they're just if they're not talking then they don't want to see them because they're always there. But I do agree there were times where I'm like, where are the demons? Like they should have been there. But
yeah. So then also in the cast here, I noticed we got Ruth Wilson as Marissa Coulter, who's the it seems like you got quite a few veteran actors here. You got her. You got James McAvoy as Lord Asriel. You got Lin-Manuel Miranda as Lee Scoresby, and a few other people here. Like, do you feel like the cast is like? Is there any particular standouts or people to note in this stuff?
I think Miss Coulter, Marissa Coulter. I think Ruth Wilson. I think is I would call her out. I think I forget the actor's. I don't know the actor's name. The guy who played Father Corum, I think, was really impressive as well.
That actor is James Cosmo.
Oh, James Cosmo. I think he did a really.
That's a cool name.
Right, I want my name to be James Scott. He was actually in Chronicles of Narnia previously. So.
Oh, he was.
Oh, cool.
And also, I mean, I think he did a fine performance, but I wouldn't say like he was amazing. But the guy who was who played what who did he play again? I'm gonna blank. His one of the guys from Harry Potter played a minor character in the show, and it'll come to me in 1 minute. He played like the best friend, and one of the friends who's always losing his toad, Neville. Oh. Yes, he played Neville. The guy who played Neville.
Oh, Neville's in the show?
Yeah, he was in it for one episode.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's awesome. I love that guy.
No, he played the mayor or the leader of the small fishery town in the Arctic.
Yorick was chilling out?
Yeah, that's him. That was him.
Oh, okay. Is he still as sexy hot as everyone's surprised? Where they're like, whoa, Neville got buff and thin and pretty.
He looks fine. But he's an evil guy, so I mean, I don't know. I wasn't looking for his looks, but you can kind of see it, but he looks really different from when he was a young boy. He's skinny.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm just teasing, because that was the thing that people couldn't get over. It's like, wait, Neville's supposed to be the dweeby dude, and this guy is not dweeby anymore.
No, I think he was just, you know, he still had his young boy body, and he had to grow up a little bit.
But then also, I mean, just again, there's so many people in the show. I know Andrew Scott shows up at one point as Colonel John Perry, who's like a Marine in this whole situation.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, you didn't really see him. It was more like seeing his photo or seeing him in brief moments on the YouTube channels like that. But you didn't really see him a lot.
Okay. And then there's like a decent voice cast here for some of the other animal characters. Because I know Peter Serafinowicz is in this as well, which I was like seeing. David Suchet. And so who plays the big polar bear dude? Do you guys know? What's that guy's name?
I saw the name, but I can give it one minute.
Joe Tandberg is the actor that plays Eorik Byrnson.
Yeah, that's
giant polar bear.
He looks a lot. I saw a picture of him. He looks like a very young guy. And the voice is so deep and old sound. I mean, it doesn't sound like the body.
It's pretty impressive.
Okay. Hey, that's a good voice actor. They can sell different ages or different type of tones. But yeah, so now it's interesting because, again, like we said, this show is supposedly fairly expensive, even with this low population thing, because the first two episodes, I believe, were directed by Tom Hooper, who is currently on a bit of a downward slide just because he did Cats recently. So you're just like, ooh, boy. But would you say this is a better outing for him compared to that?
Oh, way better.
I haven't seen Cats yet, so...
I didn't see Cats yet. I'm just going to guess by the trailer.
By the tomato rate meter.
By the box office, but...
yeah, by the box office.
Yeah, so, I mean, would you say that it's still a fairly decently written and directed show on the whole?
I think so.
I mean, like, anything specifics? Like, what do you think, like, works about the writing or the directing in the show?
About the writing? I think the writing is... It walks a fine line of being a really good adaptation, but seeming like its own thing at the same time.
Okay.
I think that the story is, I think it's a really complex story, and they've been able to separate into episodes and able to tell a cohesive story that makes sense and there's a suspense, and even though I've read the books, I was still kind of like waiting to hear what's next and kind of curious. So And the directing wise, I mean, I think it was all the actors did an amazing job. There was nobody I was like, I don't believe you, or I was bored by.
That's true. Even little Roger did a really good job, and you know,
yeah.
He's just a little plot kid he's the one that wandered off, was gobbled up that Lyra was looking for, and did a great job. So did the Costa brothers.
Oh yeah, they were really amazing. And actually, I saw the boy who played Roger. He was in Aeronauts.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah, his name's, if it's Roger here, it's Lynn Lloyd.
Yeah, I think he did a really good job, and I think he kind of played like a little servant boy very well. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but...
you play a good servant. That's a good credit.
Well, the film's ending only works... Sorry, film. TV series. It only works if you buy that Laura and Lyra... Man, I'm messing up all day today. Lyra and Roger are closer than family. Because they're the only family they have.
Right.
Fair enough.
And you do buy it. So it's a very tragic... See, there was a film called The Golden Compass that was based on this series. Mm-hmm. And it was made by cowards. And this miniseries wasn't. So I mean,
the problem with
the film is
they're trying to condense a whole book or so worth of material into a 2-hour film, and that's always going to cause problems. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, there was some changes. I would say that I think the movie. I mean, I haven't gotten to the end of the book yet, but the movie I think works very. The TV show. Sorry, you got me again, bro. You got me to say it. The TV show works really well because they got it in the books, she's not as close as Roger. I mean, and she's she's invested in finding him, but not as like hardcore at the very start as she is in the TV show. So the fact that she's her only friend actually which is the change that they did, works even better, and it creates like a better storyline. Like, you care more because you're like, they really love each other and they're so close. So it actually makes you buy it more, I think.
I think so too. And another smart thing this series did, there's a character in a side plot, you can call it, involving this boy named William. He doesn't even show up till the second book in the series, and that book's called The Subtle Knife, I believe.
Yeah, the Subtle Knife.
I thought it was very smart that they included his, the beginning of his arc now, so it's not as jarring when he becomes more of a major player. Because as book readers, when I started reading The Subtle Knife, you know, 40, 50 pages in, I'm like, where the F is Lyra? And Pan, I don't give a crap about this Will kid. So smart on the TV people to put him in earlier before everyone gets pissed off next season when he comes
out. Okay, yeah, and that's Amir Wilson who's playing Will Perry, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And I think he's also a really strong, start, new cast member. And he did, even though he started later on, he was still kind of, you're really invested in the stories. I think that they did a good job there as well.
Well, that's great to hear. Now, here's something, we talk a lot about this stuff. Now, I know, I've only heard so many reviews for the show, and I've heard a few people, not everyone loves this show, but most people seem to like it. Wait, would you say there's any notable things that hold back this show if you don't fully love it kind of thing? Or, what are maybe some, any issues you have?
I would say the issue I would have, and again, I think it's maybe, I'm sure it's budget and also, is that the daemons don't really look real.
Do they look like CG creatures?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe it works in some ways because the daemons aren't really animals, so maybe, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, even the bear, it's a decent job. It's way better than they could have done in the 90s, for example, or even earlier 2000s, but it's still Pan, the major daemon, he doesn't look like a real ferret.
Okay, well, and then, would you say the effects, obviously it's been 10 years or 12 years since the Golden Compass came out, but would you say that the effects actually look like they've improved since that time, or do they're still a little bit
I think they've improved from that time period, but I actually never saw I heard it was bad, so I never saw the movie.
I mean, it's Oscar-winning visuals from that movie.
Really?
No, the visuals were good. And that's the most disappointing part for me in this TV series, is Yorick throws down with another polar bear.
Yeah.
And even in the book, it's written in this, almost as if Leonidas the Spartan was kicking Xerxes' ass. That's how it's written. There's trash talking, there's boasting, and it's violent as hell. And in this, you kind of see the violence through Lyra reacting, and you don't really get to see a fight at all. So it's a little disappointing. But like you were saying, it's more than likely a budget thing.
Yeah,
that strikes to me as limitations of budget, because that's like Heroes, where they would close the door and you see a bright light when someone's using powers, but you wouldn't actually see anything happen.
I was gonna say, when Eirik went in to get his armor, so you really didn't see much. You just saw him throwing people out and then came out with it all on. Like in the book, he actually has to do all the stuff to get it ready to get the armor on. They skip all of that, probably for timing and also for budget as well. Combination of those two things, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I heard the show is a little slow. Did you guys feel that at all, or do you feel like it moved at a decent pace?
I thought it was kind of slow, especially during the Tom Hooper directed episodes. But
Tom Hooper making slow stuff—that's never happened before.
I think I agree. I think the first episode was really slow. I think it sped up a little bit after that. It didn't bother me too much, but then again, I'm not bragging, but European films are often a lot slower than that, so it didn't bother me too much.
Fair enough. Now, it's funny, too, I noticed a few of the other directors who worked on this show. One of them is Otto Barthurst, who did the fourth and fifth episodes. Do you know what he did before this show?
I don't know.
That terrible Robin Hood movie that came out a few years ago.
Oh, no.
So would you say this is better work on his part?
Capitalism is bad or something?
Yeah, the one that was a big, secret Marxist communist thing, just like, hey, overthrow the rich class and the working class get revenge kind of thing. It's like, oh, okay.
Eviscerate the proletariat. That's what Robin of Locksley always said.
So you would say this is at least better work from him then for those episodes?
I'd say so, yeah.
That's good.
I think so. I mean, I did not see that movie, but I assume it was. I found it.
It was. Yeah, that movie was awful. I mean, that was clearly a work where he was work for hire kind of thing. So, would you say there's any other major points to bring up, good or bad for the show, before we started winding into final thoughts?
No, I don't know. What did you think of Serafina?
I enjoyed Serafina. I kind of liked her. She had these kind of cool tattoos and cool things. I mean, she's sort of non-emotional. So I wasn't she's not something I'm really fascinated by, but I'm curious to know more about her.
Oh, and Serafina is being played by Ruta Gedmintas, who is from The Strain and The Borgias.
Yeah, and she was she was also in Lip Service, I believe.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, and then how was James McAvoy and Lin-Manuel Miranda? They're the two biggest actors I recognize outside of those people in the cast.
Well, I liked Lin-Manuel as Lee Scoresby a lot. I think he really captured the adventurous spirit of that character, but also the cautious optimistic of a scoundrel. Lee Scoresby is supposed to be kind of be like the Han Solo, like, boy, I sure love adventure. And then, you know, adventure with a purpose comes along and he's like, a purpose? I don't know. You know, and he gets kind of irritated at the idea of being a part of something bigger. And it's a really good theme. I thought he did great at that. James McAvoy, I like a lot. I think he's incredibly talented. I thought he carried the tone of this character. He seems, and this is going to sound silly given how old James is, but he seems really young to me to play Lord Asriel. But what do you think?
I mean, that's interesting. I think he seemed like he seems young to be her father, I guess, a little bit. Yeah, I do see that.
I mean, she's an incredibly young actress, too. So
right. It works. There's nothing mathematically wrong about it.
No. It's just... I think it's because he also doesn't really play her father. Like, right. She plays... even though he himself even says, I didn't want to be your father. I said, like, you're not my... You're your father. It's like, well, I never said I was your father. So he doesn't really act like a parental in any shape or form. While Marissa, mm-hmm. I think, even though I think Ruth Wilson must be around the same age, maybe a little bit younger, she seems like a mother.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say that was a difference.
Because it's interesting to see how they compare to their film counterparts. Because Bradley, you saw the film, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, because James McAvoy was Daniel Craig's character. And then, speaking of someone who doesn't seem to be the same age, Lin-Manuel was the character that was played by Sam Elliott in the film. So I'm like...
Yeah. So Sam Elliott's also a good Lee Scoresby, though.
Okay, so like
the film was just so many missed opportunities after another on what the spirit of the book is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So like, that feels like it's still a good change. It's like, yeah, he's not playing the same type of character as Sam Elliott, but it still works for what the character's written.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think he seems like the same energy and the same. He's like it's his own spin, but I think a good adaptation makes some difference, makes some changes because you have to or it won't work.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, like if Sam Elliott said, like if I asked, where's your Damon, Lee Scoresby Sam Elliott, he could say, I am my own Damon, and it would make sense.
I am my own Damon.
Yeah, because that's just the kind of guy he is, you know.
I love Sam Elliott, he's the best.
Yeah,
so then, same. Any other last things about the production? Because I know they got quite a few talented people working on like the cinematography and that stuff.
Well, I would say the shot, the shooting is beautiful. They do a lot of really great landscape shots where they go over things, like in the bird of, God's eyes kind of views of things. And I think it's all gorgeous. I mean, it's of course a mixture of special effects. And also, they also have some cool, they also do puppetry, so... it's a combination of CGI and puppets for the Daemons, which I thought was pretty cool. So that's pretty impressive, which makes sense, I guess, because it makes it probably easier to act to a puppet than act to a little ball.
Yeah, yeah. And then a composer works on this that I love a lot, Lauren Balfa, who's one of Hans Zimmer's protégés. He did stuff like, recently he did the music for Mission Impossible Fallout. He's done a bunch of the Call of Duty games, and he did work for The Crown and Genius and that stuff. Is the music any good in this?
I think so. I mean, I didn't really... I mean, it creates good motions. I mean, it's not something I really think about too much for this one for some reason.
Ah, fair enough. Bradley, any thoughts on production and stuff?
I'll say it is very much. I remember the score from this, and I'll probably remember it for a long time, especially given this got a second season. It all flows very well, and it's all very whimsical, but also very serious. Should be, because, you know, it's a show about multiple worlds, not all fantasy, but not all reality either.
Nice. Well, and that's the thing I'm excited about, that this got renewed for a second season before they even premiered the first episode. So they have some confidence in this.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, I'm really excited to see, you know, how they do it next season. I'm like, very excited.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like, so this one is mostly just the first book, right?
Yeah, with a little bit of The Subtle Knife, but not very much. It's more like Will Perry's The Subtle Knife part.
Okay. Well then, unless there's anything else you want to bring up, who wants to start with their final thoughts?
I guess I will.
Woo! Yeah, go ahead, Brad.
Final thoughts. I was surprised how well this worked. It's a very complicated story, but also a simple story. A girl loses her friend. She wants to find him because she loves him like family. Simple. But also you have ideas like, what is ambition? And when is ambition too much? Is the murder of something worth finding out what truth is? And did you realize that's what you've believed all along? Whoa, mind blown. And those are really big ideas that honestly turned a lot of readers away when they happened. Certainly when I read this the first time, I was very uncomfortable. Like, am I a fraud? You know, it's like really, it's deep thinking stuff. And certainly if you read anything that Philip Pullman has to say, right away you'll think, this guy's just a pretentious asshole. But you know, that's just how some people come across. And I personally thought this was going to be unfilmable after the movie, was so afraid to take those big swings at the end. Oh, man. And that was heartbreaking to me. That's when I realized that maybe stories like this shouldn't be told through cinema and they should just stick to page. But I'm glad to say I was wrong, and I'm very excited for a season two, and I'm happy that Lyra and Will finally get to meet. We never actually got to see that cinematically, and really looking forward to it. And I really think even if you find that some of this can border on offending you, there's still a lot to enjoy here and also to think about. So I'm recommending it. I'm giving it 7 bear paws that should have been peoply hands, but they just didn't have the budget.
So then the whole anti-establishment and anti-organized religion thing is still very prevalent in this, right?
Yeah.
I would say so. They don't call out anything by name, but it's pretty on the nose towards the end.
I still love how they did that in the movie where they had the totally obvious bad guy for people where they're like, we're not saying that the Catholic Church, but it's pretty clearly the Catholic Church. I mean, yeah. If you have Terrence Stamp in a role, it's pretty assured that he's probably a bad guy in that situation.
Right.
Was Terrence Stamp or Christopher Lee who was in that movie?
I don't know. I'd have to...
Who's a notable bad guy. I'm like, oh, he's in this? Oh, yeah, they're obviously the bad guys.
I feel like I would have remembered if it was Christopher Lee. But yeah,
yeah, I think it was Terrence Stamp. But anyways, Paloma.
Okay, well, I was also kind of both excited and nervous because I also wasn't sure because I didn't see the Golden Globes. I had heard things. So I was like, maybe it'll be hard for the movie. But I really enjoyed it. I actually got to see some sort of preview of it. So I saw the pilot like a week early. And I was very, after that, like, yeah, I even wanted to create a podcast, kind of a blog about it. But, I was, it really kind of held my attention every week. It was super complex and interesting. I think that I was worried that a child actor leading a TV show wouldn't work because it's just really rare to find a child that could really pull that off. And I think we found one with Daphne. And I think, I was really invested in it. And I can't wait to hear to watch the second season. And I'm kind of sad I have to wait, probably a year. I would give it, nine Damons not separate but from their children.
All right.
Well, and I gotta ask one question: does Lin-Manuel Miranda sing at all in this?
She does. He sings.
Of course he did. Well, I mean, he produced this too, so I'm just like, okay, of course he's gonna put a spotlight on him somewhere in this. So
yeah, well, the first scene we have of him is him singing. So
was it rapping?
Just singing like, or not?
Here I am with my Damon going down like this.
You know, it's surprising it wasn't a rap, but I thought that would have been maybe would have worked a little better.
Yeah, it wasn't. I think it was. Wasn't it a real song he was singing? Like a real. Kind of, I mean, I recognize the lyrics a little bit.
Yeah, just a little sky shanty. Yeah,
sky shanty.
Yeah, but yeah, he also sang when he was also hummed when he was nervous a little bit. So there was a lot, but there was a little bit of singing involved. Yeah.